And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, you remember the Grinch that stole Christmas, right?
Yep.
Well, here's Mike Johnson, who came into the speakership with tricks but no treats.
Yeah. Yeah, he's certainly a trickster. There's no end to the tricks of the GOP in terms of how they want to run things. You know,
you think they want to run things? They don't want to run things. That's the whole point. They don't want anything to run.
Well, they want to run things that they want to run.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, but they don't want people to know actually what they're doing as they're doing. That you know, and that kind of goes with Mike Johnson. You know, he since he was elevated to the speakership, there's been more and more coming out about his background, and it gets curiouser and curiouser. We've just gone from Dr. Seuss to Alice in Wonderland, I guess.
Well, let me ask you this about Mike Johnson, because something that puzzles me. According to his financial disclosure forms, this guy doesn't have any assets. He doesn't have a bank account. He doesn't have anything. Yet, he was a top lawyer for years. His wife works. Well, how's that possible?
Well, that's a good question. Technically, the form that he fills out for years that doesn't show any reportable assets only requires that you list bank accounts and similar things that have a value of over $5,000. But you would think he would have at least $5,000 socked away somewhere. So that's something that's curious there. And
that's a very polite way of putting it.
You know, the other thing it raises is sources of income. I mean, is he really getting income from some sources that he doesn't want to show? And
you mean like Clarence Thomas?
Yeah, like Clarence Thomas. That kind of thing. Of course, if that's the case, then he's got some real issues with the IRS. You know, and maybe that's why they're always attacking the IRS. I mean, you saw this trick that they were performing this week where the overwhelming number of members of Congress want to give aid to Israel. And Johnson has inserted a trick, which is that we'll pass the bill, but only if we take away $14.7 billion from what's already been appropriated for the IRS, because that means the IRS will have less power to investigate the millionaires and the billionaires that fund us. And of course, the Congressional Budget Office came along and said, you know, that's penny wise and pound foolish, because by taking away the 14.7, you're going to probably lose about $30 billion. In other words, a two-for-one loss.
It's not even penny-wise, because it's not like they would save the money. He's just proposing to shift the money.
Yeah.
So there's no penny saved at all. It's just a dead loss.
Right, right. They don't care. And as you mentioned to me, there was another one of his colleagues, I think from Louisiana, said, well, we don't believe the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. And that's the same congressman that was pointed out by one of the CNN reporters that you cited the Congressional Budget Office in previously for something that you did want.
So, yes, you see something wrong with that?
That's why they're
You see something wrong with complete hypocrisy?
That's why they're politicians. That's why Congress has such a high rating, right?
Exactly. Exactly. But listen, he's not the only one like that. He's only over in the House. Let's go over to the Senate, where Tommy Tuberville continues.
Right.
What do you make of that?
Well, you know, my wife, the psychologist, always used to say there's the presenting problem and there's the underlying problem. And Tommy Tuberville has presented this, and I think a lot of people have taken it at face value, that this was an anti-abortion stance. That he said he would lift his objection to any of these 300 and some people, 300 and some of our military and all the branches being elevated, if the military would stop paying for members to travel to have health care in where they could receive it, and that included abortion care. And he seems unmovable on this. However, when you read things lately, what seems to be is, because this week his cohorts in the Republican caucus rebelled against him. They went to the floor and they were denouncing him. And what Dan Sullivan, who's former military from Alaska, senator, was very strong in leading the charge. You had Joni Ernst from Iowa, former military. You had Lindsey Graham, former JAG Corps. You had Mitt Romney, who wasn't military. And there may have been one or two more going on the floor and excoriating him, calling him hypocritical, calling him dangerous, all these things, and it didn't move him. So there's a speculation out there that there's an underlying problem, or an underlying issue that isn't what he's presenting. And that underlying issue is that not passing these while Joe Biden is president would leave them open until after the election. And if Donald Trump wins, then Donald Trump gets to appoint people that he wants to these posts. And if you remember, Trump and his backers have said that if he gets back in office, they're going to appoint not necessarily the best qualified, but the most loyal to him. And Trump was, you know, upset with General Milley, who was being very careful about things he would do, and Ron Esper, his defense secretary. He would be appointing the Mike Flynn types of people to these posts. So, that's where we seem to be.
In his first term, he was really winging it, Trump.
Yeah.
He got who he could get. That's not the situation now.
No.
Isn't it the case that we have at least two or three very well-funded efforts to identify, I don't know what you would call them, fantastic reactionaries, to staff a potential second term for Trump?
How about authoritarians?
All right.
Anti-constitutional, anti-democratic, both.
Anti-immigrant, racist, anti-worker. How about all that?
Yeah. People to these positions.
Yeah.
To preserve a life that left us in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Life in America.
And we know some of the names of the people heading this up. One of the most prominent ones is Stephen Miller.
Yes.
The man who invented the policy of separating children from their parents at the border to teach them a lesson.
Right. And his mentor, David Horowitz.
That's right, who's apparently involved in financing this thing.
Yeah, or raising the money.
Yeah, raising the money for it, right.
You have the Heritage Foundation.
That's a separate effort, apart from David Horowitz, right.
Yeah. Steve Bannon, I'm sure, is out there doing this, because that's been his thing for a long time. And
they have lists. I mean, just like Don McGahn had lists for judges, these people already have lists for who will take over which particular jobs they want them to take over.
And unlike Joe McCarthy's list that didn't really have names on it. This has names.
And these reactionary people, authoritarian people, crypto fascists really do exist.
Yes.
This is a big country. You find all kinds of things in this country. Just off, you pick up the rock and look under the rock. You'll find it.
Well, that was the thing, is Donald Trump lifted the rock.
Yeah.
He lifted it at Charlottesville, and all these creatures slithered out, and they're not going back. They're not going back on that. And it's being seen in a whole wide view of places. We're seeing anti-Semitism at record levels because people have been emboldened to do this. As I said, it's a 1950s thing, and racism is open. A whole host of.
And even if Trump gets defeated, this movement doesn't disappear, because Trump did not create this movement. Trump is a person that this movement has used. He latched onto it. He used this. This Christian nationalist movement, which is what we're talking about, preceded Trump by 30 years. It has deep roots in the Republican states, in the states that are solid red, all of which are gerrymandered to guarantee that precisely Christian nationalists will be returned in the primaries, where almost nobody votes, and therefore dominate the Republican caucus, which they do.
Yeah, and I mean, and this was the intent of some of the people that around 1980, the Paul Weyricks, and the people who were decided or found that they could utilize or the evangelical vote. Get them involved in politics. The Pat Robertsons of this world, the Jerry Falwells of this world, and then with the use of the abortion issue, they were able to make peace with what really had been their arch enemy, which was the Catholics,
right,
in the country. Remember, the anti-Catholic movement was huge among the KKK. And
well, the KKK in the North was basically an anti-Catholic movement.
Yeah, I've told that story, I think, here many times, about my grandfather, who was the our family were the only Jews in Blakely, PA, and they had a store there, and it was on Second Street, and two blocks down on where Second Street ended, off Lincoln Avenue, of all names, was the Company Field. And there was a Klan march down Second Street towards the field. They were going to burn the cross. And my grandfather was out on his porch taking a look at this. And the people who were in it were customers of his. And one of them yelled, "Don't worry, Nate, it's not you we're after."
That day.
They were after the Catholics. Yeah. Lakeland was a very Protestant town, Welsh, mm-hmm. Protestant town. So, we had that unholy alliance, and we've seen that with the church or the Supreme Court, which now is six very Opus Dei-type Catholics, or at least five of them are, and three Jews who don't have any power there. So, but that was the thing. You know, you never had this. They were like oil and water, and now they've found some way to mix.
Who are the three Jews?
I'm sorry, there's two now. Kagan and who's the other one? Or is Kagan the only one left?
Yeah, she's just Kagan, that's right.
Yeah, it was three Jews when it was Kagan.
You had Kagan, Puckett, Ginsburg.
And Breyer.
Right, so they're two, just Kagan left.
There's just Kagan left.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the... But we got to get back to that political alliance and what they've been able to do and how they've been able to fund. Because the other interesting thing about the funding is one of the prime funders of this organization was, or still is, the Charlie Koch, the Koch brothers. But the Kochs are libertarians. They are not religious people. And they're seeing this movement become a religious movement. So it's certainly... and what I think that...
But these people want a Christian country.
Yeah.
Mike Johnson wants a Christian country.
Yeah.
It's quite an astounding reading of the amendment to the Constitution that says there shall be no establishment of religion. How is an original textualist able to square the circle on that one?
Well, but there's the other clause that they use, that that there shall be no bar on religion, on that. And they've elevated that part of the First Amendment above it. But what you can't get around is the words of the founders. And as I've said, I've done research. Jefferson, Adams, Washington, Madison were all very clear that this was not a Christian country and it shouldn't be viewed as such. But, there's big money in advocating the other way. For years, it used to just be this this one guy, David Barton, that went around the country grifting, off telling people what they wanted to hear about this. But now it's institutionalized, and you have these schools, these law schools that are run by deeply evangelical or Catholic theology. Liberty, Antonin Scalia Law School at George Mason. Regents Law School. If you remember, the George W. Bush Justice Department had heavily hired Regents people. That's Pat Robertson's. You have Ave Maria, the guy who owns Domino Pizza, being a Catholic-oriented law school, and you have others that are forming. I don't know what the what was the law school that Mike Johnson was going to be dean of. Never came into existence.
I don't know what the name of it was, but it was supposed to be a Christian law school, and it was sponsored by a private Louisiana university, and they even bought a $5 million building and started to renovate the building without ever doing a study to find out if they had enough money to open the school, which of course they didn't. And then Johnson was someone they were counting on to help them raise the money. He had no way to raise it and didn't raise it. So he was the dean of a school that he couldn't create, even though he said there was no question but that it would be created. So here's a guy with no executive experience, none whatsoever, who is now the executive in charge of one half of the Congress. So, that shows a bit of frivolity on the part of the Republicans.
But it's not funny.
No, it's not funny.
All of us. You could laugh at it, but they're doing great damage. They're doing great damage.
Which they mean to do.
Yes.
That's their intent. Yeah. That's their intent.
And, their morality gets checked at the door when it runs up against the idea of power. This week we had that vote on George Santos. And the Republicans, by and large, with a small group of Democrats, voted to retain him, despite all the things we know about him. Now, he hasn't been convicted of a crime, but we've seen the paperwork on this. We know about all his lies that he's admitted to. That he was elected under false pretenses. We're not even sure what his real name is at this point. We know that he has a phony treasurer.
Well, she pled guilty.
Yeah.
So.
Then he named somebody else who nobody knows who that is to be the treasurer of his campaign, and they're all they're fine with that. They're fine with that.
They probably all wish they thought of it.
Yeah, they wish they thought of it. And this week we've got some elections that are going to be decided on the abortion issue, which the GOP, they caught the car. They finally got their wish. They got their Supreme Court justices to overturn Roe v. Wade and sent back to the states Although now they're saying, well, we didn't really mean that it should be decided by the states. We want a national ban. But meantime, it's up to the states. And so in several places, in Virginia, that's going to be an issue. And they're going to see whether or not the governor, Youngkin down there, Glenn Youngkin, who's on a school choice issue. By the way, that falls into this as well. Got elected on a school choice issue. Whether he's going to have the power to gain control of both houses of the legislature.
He's close, right?
Both houses have a two... the Democrats are up two votes in the Senate and down two votes in the...
House of Delegates.
So we'll see. And there's a lot of people, a lot of money people hoping on Youngkin, because if he's able to pull that off, they'll try to elevate him to be the nominee against Donald Trump. Having lost their taste for
DeSantis.
Ron DeSantis. Yeah, Ron DeSantis. So
they won't go for Haley, right?
Well, she's a woman of color.
Yeah, that's a problem. And minority of an immigrant.
Right. Child of immigrants. So yeah. It makes it more difficult for them. Let me put it that way. And then in Ohio, we have this anti-abortion or this abortion rights amendment to the Constitution that they've been, the GOP didn't want to get voted on, because every time it gets voted on in the states, even heavily Republican states like Kansas, it wins. The anti-abortion votes lose. And they lose substantially. So they tried that trick back in August of passing another amendment saying you needed a 60% vote in order to change the Constitution. And that didn't work. So now they're trying to purge voters. Matter of fact, Glenn Youngkin's been purging voters. He's picking up on the Georgia method of things, the Kansas method of things, purging. And you can be sure they're mostly Democrats that they're purging. So we'll see what happens in Ohio.
Well, then you got Kentucky.
We have Kentucky. The race there is a little bit different. It's going to be a test, because you have a very strong Republican state. It used to be a Democratic state, but a strong Republican state where you've got kind of a nutcase Republican running for governor. Not quite as bad as the one that they ran before against Andy Beshear, but Andy Beshear's done a good job and is fairly popular in Kentucky, so we'll see what happens there.
Bringing us back to Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Where we have a judge's race, a very important series of judges' races, where abortion plays a role in the judge's race, which is, you would think, unusual.
The Democratic polling, and I'm sure the Republican polling, same thing, shows that abortion is still a powerful issue. And the Republican, on the state Supreme Court race, one billionaire Republican has poured more money in than everybody else on the Democratic side put together to attack Dan McCaffrey. And the Democrats are fighting back, or McCaffrey's campaign is fighting back, pointing out that the Republican candidate, Carluccio, is very strongly anti-abortion, but doesn't want people to know it. She actually scrubbed from her website some of the things that she's had on there. So they're not only playing that she's anti-abortion, but the fact that she is hiding that from people. So we'll see what happens there.
But McCaffrey has really been getting hit.
Yeah, and there's some things he could be hit with. But the in the Superior Court race, the ads aren't as strong. But one of the Democrats, Jill Beck, has more money, and she's been running ads. And she's proudly talking about the fact that she's endorsed by Planned Parenthood, mm-hmm. and that abortion is an issue for her, mm-hmm. as a woman. And matter of fact, McCaffrey's been saying he's Planned Parenthood. You know, there's an interesting thing. One of the other races, the Commonwealth Court race, which is one of those that's also the billionaire Jeffrey Yaz has been pouring maybe about $500,000, from what I understand, into that race. The Republican is touting all of the endorsements that she has, and one of them is from a coal a pro-coal coalition.
Pro-coal?
Yeah.
Coal?
Coal.
Yeah. Not okay. Okay.
You see that? You see the police, and then you see coal on there. It flashes on the screen. So it'll be, you can look up her thing. So staying away. And really, that race would have nothing to do with abortion. There are no cases that would come before it. Well, actually, it might if there's a constitutional amendment issue, might come before it. But generally, the other cases that would come would go through the Superior Court and the Supreme Court. So we have those things on Tuesday, and both sides. And I know the Democrats have been relying on their write-in ballots. They've got a lot of them out there. I think Dan McCaffrey's problem is he's been attacked and attacked and attacked while people are sending in those write-in ballots. So I don't know how, if he's going to run up the biggest scores that a Democrat would normally get from write-in, but we're going to find out. Hmm. We're going to find out on that.
So this is, as the Democrats are running it, this is an election which is a base election, turnout to base.
Yeah, and a lot of times they usually are, but we'll see. And we'll see what young people do. They were big, you know, with John Fetterman. And by the way, I don't know if you've noticed, Fetterman is really getting his traction. He's out there really slamming Republicans on things. He's not being bashful as a freshman senator.
To your knowledge, has he recovered most of his ability to give a public speech?
I've heard him, and I thought he had. I thought he's been speaking much better. I haven't been following it that closely, but the things I've heard, he seems to be doing much better on. And I think that that's why he's been more outspoken, so to speak, on things. I think he's feeling better, and I think the therapies have worked, and of course psychologically he's better. And
that's not good news for McDonald, even though McDonald's not going to run against him. But if Fetterman is up to snuff, he can be a big aid to Casey.
You mean McCormick?
I mean McCormick, right?
McCormick.
Yeah,
and that could be, yeah, especially in those other things. So we'll have to see on that. And you know, we ought to mention that there were some treats this week. The auto strike, the auto workers, got a pretty decent contract from the big three. It took a while. They settled with Ford first, and then Stellantis, the old Chrysler, and finally GM came around. It wasn't everything they wanted, but certainly they did away with a lot of the problems that they had from the last contract and improved the improved wages, and it's been reverberating. We've seen some of the non-union companies talking about raising wages, and we see the union is emboldened. They may be going to try to unionize these other plants.
You mean the electric car company plants?
The electric car company plants and some of the other plants down south that make gas-powered vehicles. So,
all right, that would be very interesting. That would be a big change.
Yes.
Well, we're done for this week. We'll be able to see. The election is this coming Tuesday.
Right. And if you tuned in to us too early today on Sunday, you can hear us at 12:30 Eastern Standard Time.
That's right. That's right. And get up on Tuesday and vote.
Get up on Tuesday and vote. Vote early and often, as they used to say.
Only in Chicago. Only in Chicago.
Okay.
See you next week.
See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week. Same time, same place.